Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another WTF1 podcast. Today, we are discussing the new calendar. But first, before we dive into that, I'm, of course, Matthew Gallagher. And joining me, to my left, as per always, but not really to my left, it's Tommy Bellingham.
Hello.
WTF1 founder. How are you?
I'm good. F1 is nearly back. Well, we've got a month,
it's looming.
I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that light is the 2020 Austrian Grand Prix.
Yeah, and the time of recording as well. We've seen the Mercedes Formula One car fired up and going around Silverstone today, isn't it?
So emotional.
Awesome to see, to hear some engines again.
Absolutely. It's been a long time coming, I say that.
Absolutely. So we are discussing some Formula One, some actual topics about Formula One, which is very exciting. And it's about the calendar. So we have, is it 8 confirmed at the moment races?
We do. So it's, for anyone that hasn't seen, I'm sure everyone has because we were all very hyped when the news came out, but it's Austria, then Austria again, Hungary, Silverstone, Silverstone again, Spa, Belgium, Monza, and that's all we've got so far.
So far. I imagine there will be more races added as things get better in the world. But we're discussing, does it favour Red Bull, the current calendar and the 8 that are currently confirmed? It's something that's an interesting topic of conversation. And we've actually got a few insights from you guys. So at Daniel Skews F1 says, I think Red Bull put the calendar together. At Nacho Common underscore Guy says, double headers at non-Mercedes dominant tracks might make Hamilton's title chances harder to get. And at Nick underscore Smith 49, would hotter races like Spain in mid-August hamper Mercedes like we've seen before? So I guess to the first one from Daniel, I think Red Bull put the calendar together. I guess it seems that way in a sense of that they appear to be tracks that Red Bull, or at least some of the tracks that Red Bull have either won at or done pretty well at. I would argue, though, that the teams have had a lot more, or they haven't obviously had much more preparation because of the lockdown and shutdown that they've had. But in terms of looking towards the races, that they'll be able to mould their development slightly differently in the run-up to the start of the season on the 1st of July. So for me, I don't think it will be as Red Bull favoured as everyone's thinking because it's just a completely different way of looking at things, isn't it? It's a completely different calendar.
It's a really weird one, isn't it? Because the calendar obviously got announced and the first reaction from everyone was, of course, joy and hooray, we have some F1 to look forward to. And then I find it very strange that quickly started to see more and more messages of people saying things like, oh, well, this just favours Red Bull, or this isn't really a proper calendar. The person that wins the title doesn't really deserve it, and things like that. And personally, I don't really buy that. If anything, I'm looking at the calendar, and yes, Red Bull have done well in Austria, Red Bull do well in Hungary, but If you look at it overall, Austria and Austria and Hungary, you'd say maybe Red Bull might be better there. But then you've got a double header at Silverstone, which Mercedes are really good at.
Hasn't really ever been a Red Bull track, has it?
Then Spain, which Mercedes always win. And then Belgium and Italy, which definitely aren't Red Bull favoured tracks. So it's a bit of a weird one. And I've been seeing this a lot of people getting very hyped and, you know, as someone that is rather
a passionate fan,
not a fanboy of Max Verstappen, yes, I would very much love it if he could have a championship challenge. But I think we're very easily forgetting just how we felt after F1 testing when we saw just how quick Mercedes were. And it's insane how quickly it's gone from, oh, the season's over, Mercedes are going to trounce it, to now suddenly Mercedes are on the back foot, which I don't quite believe personally.
Rubbish. Yeah, I think that's not exactly how I think it's going to pan out when we get to Austria. I guess it's because people look at the first race and they're like, oh, well, it's a double header at Austria. That's a Red Bull win in both of those races, and then Hungary as well. So I imagine they're thinking of the momentum that Red Bull will have. But as you say, not even half of the races will be Red Bull dominant in terms of when we look at the past. And I don't think the team's forms will be the same anyway, due to my previous point of how they'll prepare for those races, because, you know, Austria usually comes in sort of the middle of the calendar, doesn't it? And that's after Mercedes have won the first 8 or 9. So maybe Austria was never one that they've really prepared for before. But with the fact that they now have two races around there, and it's at the start of the season, maybe we'll see a slight change in form around there. Nacho Common Guy obviously said about doubleheaders at non-Mercedes dominant tracks might make Hamilton's title chances harder to get. Again,
there's a doubleheader at Silverstone, so the other you know, it's almost even the fact that you've got two Austrian races in Hungary, which okay, say Red Bull win all three, you'd say doubleheader at Silverstone and a race at Spain would be very much Mercedes. So yeah, don't really see that personally. I mean, the less races naturally means that it's going to be a lot closer because Mercedes won't, even if Mercedes win a lot of races, the points gap isn't as high. I mean, personally, yeah, I would love if maybe Red Bull or even Ferrari get a bit of a head start on Mercedes and then Mercedes have to work for it rather than the last couple of years where they've sort of smashed it in the first half and everyone's been trying to play catch up. So it's going to be interesting. I don't, you know, even with the whole Austrian thing and Red Bull being dominant, you just never know. We've not seen any 2020 race pace yet. So it might not necessarily pan out exactly like last year did.
Exactly. And the final point about Spain being hotter in mid-August, I mean, it's a good point that Mercedes don't tend to do as well when the track conditions are hotter. But again, that Spain is never, well, apart from when it's testing and it's snowing, Spain is never usually cold anyway when they go to it. So
is going to be absolutely boiling in August in Barcelona, my days.
But then if you then liken it to Austria when it's really hot there as well.
But then is it any hotter than I say Bahrain. I know they do that in night where it's a bit cooler, but you have had races in the daytime in places like Austria, and there have been really, really hot races where Mercedes haven't done too badly. So it's going to be very interesting actually to see Spain in that heat, hopefully. I guess from a neutral F1 fan side, let's hope that spices Spain up a bit, because it's not been the greatest of races, has it, Spain?
No. So how will the doubleheaders work? At Mega Muffin says, what will they call the second of each of the Austrian and British Grand Prix? The 2020 Austrian GP2 COVID Boogaloo. didn't quite understand that.
Didn't catch on.
Sorry?
Yeah, they've not named it that, unfortunately.
No. And at @a_doctor_who says something about the second races at the Red Bull Ring and Silverstone needs to be different, otherwise they'll be boring. Obviously, there's been the chat of reverse grid races and changing the format slightly, which I am completely and utterly for, and most of the teams were. But then there's that whole debate of if it's not unanimous or Mercedes don't like it or Ferrari don't like it, then
triggered.
They basically say no to it, don't they, Tommy?
Yeah. Just a quick one then, if people don't know, that the back onto Mega Muffin, was it? Yeah, Mega Muffin. Mm-hmm. The second Austrian race will be called the Styrian Grand Prix, which I believe Styria is, I hope I'm saying that right, is the state in Austria where the Red Bull Ring is. And then Silverstone 2 will be the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, which they've decided to call it, obviously.
Actually.
Yeah.
That's what they've called it.
So, yeah, the Silverstone 2 will be 70th anniversary Grand Prix, which will hopefully be a lot better than the 1,000th Grand Prix that we had in China, where there was all that hype and it wasn't particularly great. So that's what they have named them. So they will they won't be called Austrian Grand Prix 2, for example. Back to reverse grids. Yes. I mean... massively triggered. I'm always very triggered by that. The fact that the thing annoys me so much about this whole team thing, and I've said it so many times, that I don't like the teams deciding the rules. And the argument I always seem to get when I write something like that on my Twitter, the always reply is, well, we need the teams in F1 and you know, that we want them to stay in F1, so we don't want to kind of piss them off, which I understand. But the thing that annoys me so much is how one team can just completely scrap an idea. So if the team should have some kind of input, whether we do certain things, but the fact that one team can just say, if we're not doing it, and you have 9 versus 1 and it goes in favor of the 1, that just seems daft to me, really. Yeah, especially because, of course, Mercedes aren't going to want reverse grids because they build their car around getting pole position, and that we know how bad they are in dirty air. So, of course, that was never going to be something they'd want to do.
Yeah, it's like in football, for example, if every single Premier League team apart from Liverpool said, everyone else is saying, let's restart the season. Liverpool's like, nah, I want to finish it there. We want to win the title, whatever. And then they go and do that because one team don't agree with it. It's just mad. It's crazy to think that is still a thing in Formula One. It's such an old school kind of ruling, isn't it, that you'll never please anybody in life, let alone Formula One. So I don't understand why that's there, because surely then if the 9 teams all kind of want it or are very much in favour of it, that's then annoying them slightly. So I don't know. I don't get it for me personally. And I think that's something. And I think Ross Brawn as well mentioned that he doesn't want that to continue in Formula One, and the fact that one team can veto such things. So
the Mercedes,
fingers crossed in the future, maybe.
Yeah, the Mercedes... So Toto Wolff actually came out and said why he was against it, and obviously believed it was quite artificial. I think for people that don't know, did you actually see the proposed reverse grid? And it wasn't actually a reverse grid race, which a lot of people maybe thought it was. It was actually a reverse grid race for qualifying, which I think for me is the perfect proposal. This is even more why I'm gutted they didn't do it, because reverse grid races are maybe too artificial. But for me, what they were... So the plan was going to be that they'd have a reverse grid race on the Saturday in reverse championship order. So Latifi and Russell would be at the start on pole. And if you think you have a quick race, even if it's quite a short race, we've seen it so many times when a Mercedes goes off at the first turn, or a Ferrari, they get their way through the field pretty quick, don't they? Within 10 laps, they're up at the front. So the people starting at the back, like a Hamilton, a Bottas, Leclerc, they're going to finish at the very least maybe 5th or 6th in that race.
Well, it depends how many laps.
But it depends
it?
How many
depends
laps.
If it's a short sprint
race.
But
they're going to get through the field. So they're not going to be dead last after...
Well, it's an interesting point, though, because you say that, but in my head, because they're reverse championship order, then they're not going to probably get to 5th or 6th, especially if it's a sprint race, especially if the pace difference isn't 2 really fast guys at the back and then slow, all the way to the front, which is fast again. It's not that way around. So they'll be behind the Red Bulls, they'll be behind the Ferraris, they'll be behind the Renaults, the McLarens. And in a sprint race, I don't see that they would get so far up the grid. Especially if it's 10, 15 laps, whatever.
Yeah, interesting.
It's difficult. Like we've seen, especially if it's around a difficult circuit to overtake, I think they would struggle more than maybe people think, because it would be a completely different kind of reverse grid because of the fact that it's in championship order.
True, but they've got that. I think the thing I'm trying to say is they've got 2 races almost to get to the front. So it's not like you're giving them a huge disadvantage. They're probably going to get... So even if they get mid-pack, they're going to be mid-pack on the qualifying grid, and then they'll still probably get to the front because we know the advantage of the top 3 teams. It is a little bit artificial, but my argument has always been, I personally don't mind qualifying, but I would rather see qualifying change. I think the key to making racing better is qualifying, and I know it's a traditional thing, but for me, when you look at qualifying, people always, the argument of reverse grids and stuff is it isn't fair. Well, I'd argue that how is it fair that you're giving people that already have a huge advantage, putting them at the front? Because we're always going on about how difficult it is to overtake, but there's probably no wonder we don't see much overtaking in Formula One if the quickest guys start at the front and the slowest guys start at the back. That's not a recipe that makes good overtaking. It's like giving a football team, like you say, going back to football, which we always do. Liverpool are playing a pub team, and you go, well, Liverpool are way better, so they should be 3-0 up at the start. That just seems ridiculous, doesn't it? So you're giving them that massive advantage, Mercedes, already by starting from pole position. Why not try something new, especially for the second race?
Yeah, I agree. I think the reverse grid championship order race, I don't know. I don't feel like it would have much meaning for fans as much. I think it would be like a cool thing to try, and I'm all for trying new formats, seeing what sticks, seeing what doesn't. And this is the perfect platform, I think, with how the season is going to go ahead to try this. But yeah, I think that would maybe be a bit too artificial, and also a bit like, oh, you know, that's just for qualifying. F2 have shown that a reverse grid of the top eight works an absolute treat. And I don't understand why they haven't tried to implement that this year, because it's not too artificial that eighth place can't win the race. But at the same time, it's good. It mixes it up enough to keep it entertaining.
The reverse grid argument has always been, that's why the F2 one works. The reverse grid argument has always been, well, why would you just qualify last, wouldn't you, to get the reverse grid and things? Whereas that stops it in F2 that they
do it. Exactly. So yeah, who knows? It's a shame that they're maybe not trying out as much as they can, just down to the rulings and vetoing, and it's just rubbish. But you know, Mercedes will come out with any kind of rubbish, won't they, really, to say that, you know, oh, it's artificial, it's not good for the fans, whatever. You know, we know that that's not their reason.
Yeah.
And they will never say the truth.
You can't really blame them, because at the end of the day, F1's a competitive sport. And they're not the party.
Will we shoot ourselves in the foot?
I know they're the party poopers, but at the same time, if you're in that situation, it's like, Mercedes, do you want to start last when you've got the quickest car? No, I don't think so. Why would they ever agree to it?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Of course they're going to say no, aren't they?
We interrupt this WTF1 podcast very briefly to chat about this week's sponsor. We've had them before. It's Beer 52, and they're offering a free case of 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/WTF1 and cover the £5.95 for postage. Each case is delivered direct to your doorstep, so no need to leave the house. Looking to stock up? Now's your chance. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club, with over 150,000 members that they send a brand new case to every month. Each month's case has a different theme. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, and all over the USA and Europe. If dark beer's not your thing, you can simply choose the light option, and your case will come with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack. Don't worry though, if you do change your mind, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. And remember, you have to be over 18 years old. Just go to www.beer52.com/WTF1 to get your first case of 8 beers for £5.95. That's www.beer52.com/WTF1. And remember, you have to be over 18. Let's get back to the WTF1 podcast. Right, let's move on. I think we've kind of covered Bride Riser's conversation question, which was, would you like to have seen reverse qualifying races to spice up the format of back-to-back races? So we've pretty much covered that. Next up, new races. So at Beth Smith, how badly do you not want a Sochi doubleheader to happen? So to put it into context, there's been more conversation of how the calendar will continue on after these confirmed 8 races. There's been a double Sochi thrown into the mix. There's been Imola, Mugello, which has been much more taken in by fans, much more positively. Yeah. But firstly, on the Sochi side of things, yeah, I mean, to be fair, we can't be picky.
No.
If it works for a reason, and you know, Sochi have said, look, we'll have a double header there, fine. But I think that's when you look at the track and you look at the previous races and go, okay, maybe we should test something out of that track. I don't know. I think it won't be great by any stretch of the imagination, but as I say, I don't think us as fans and Formula One themselves, they need to fit certain criteria for broadcasting rights. They have to hit like 18 races or whatever it is. They need to hit certain tick boxes, otherwise Formula One's going to be in a huge, terrible situation moving forward. So we've got to have that in mind as well. It's not just purely entertainment.
If people think that the calendar favours Red Bull, if we get a double header at Sochi, that's
Bottas
definitely
world
not
champion.
The case. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because yeah, we're obviously F1 fans and we're desperate to see Formula One back, but at the same time, double race at Sochi, not what we want to see. I think the proposed plan was, so back to the Mugello thing, this now seems to be getting some serious traction, this Mugello idea. So because the current calendar ends in Monza, they're now obviously looking at how they can fill that grid. And they originally proposed that they were going to go to Asia and then maybe the Americas as well. But if that's not the case and they have to do all these races in Europe, they're going to start adding things like Mugello, Hockenheim, Imola, things like that to add to the calendar. And it seems like Mugello is now a very, very strong possibility that we could be racing at Mugello after Monza, which would be pretty crazy.
And it'd be the 1,000th race for Ferrari, wouldn't it, at Mugello, if that was the case.
Deadwood.
Very interesting. And that's the quite positive thing, I think, for a lot of F1 fans, is that we get in these tracks thrown into conversation that we would never have even dreamed of racing around at Formula One in any sort of future years in the next 5 or 10 years. But, you know, you've got Imola being thrown into the question, which would be sensational to go back there. And it's crazy that these sort of circuits are even being uttered, isn't it?
Yeah, but, imagine. I'd love to see Imola back. It's probably not. Imola and Mugello seem like one of those tracks where they're not going to be the greatest for overtaking, maybe a bit like Zandvoort, but to see modern F1 cars going around there would be pretty incredible. And maybe that would favour Red Bull again. So,
but we don't know. All speculation. Yeah. We haven't been there. So next question, at Das Ector Jan or Jan says, does the Corona crisis give the chance for older circuits which aren't in the current calendar to make a comeback into 2021? Yes, I think we've pretty much covered that.
Maybe not 2021. Depends how this year.
Depends how they do. And depends. Yeah. And I guess, well, I say yes. I didn't mean it as I actually read that as 2020. But yeah, 2021, I suppose it really depends on what financial situation all the circuits are in. And because this whole situation has thrown the cat amongst the pigeons in terms of finances. No circuits in January, February planned for this. So we don't know, do we? But it could be thrown into the equation if, for whatever reason, F1 look at this circuit and go, wow, you actually brought in a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that this season is going to be so strange, but the more this goes on, the more it's maybe looking like things could still be very strange in 2021, and we might have the same kind of situation where they have to completely rethink the F1 calendar. I think we did, I can't remember when it was, maybe a long time ago, we spoke about a calendar where, to save on kind of air mileage and all this kind of stuff, that it would do the continents almost in order. So rather than like skipping back and forth around the world and going a bit crazy. And maybe this has almost triggered that might be the F1 calendar of the future, and we have to do it this way, which might be the way it has to be.
Food for thought, Tommy. Mm. Food for thought. It's an interesting one. Obviously, we'd love to know what you guys think in the comments section below. There's going to be lots of speculation as to where we're going to end up by the end of 2020. How many races are we going to have? Will that change the calendar in the future as well, as Das Ector Jan asked as well? It's an interesting one, but I think we've pretty much covered it, haven't we, Tommy? Have you got anything else to add in this kind of quite short podcast, but still covering off quite an interesting topic of Red Bull potentially leading the championship and winning? But I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, it is quite interesting. Now we've kind of gone through this podcast and we're talking about the fact that we don't know what the races are going to be. That's going to be a really interesting dynamic in the championship, whether in a month's time when we do actually go racing, will we know the calendar? And back to the whole Red Bull, does it favour Red Bull? It would be interesting if, say, Verstappen wins both races in Austria and Hungary and Mercedes have a bit of a shocker. Mercedes go into those next races and say we're still in the same situation. It's going to be really interesting to see how they approach the next few races, and people like Lewis Hamilton going for the title. Would he go absolutely balls to the wall because he might think, oh, there's only four races left, I need to do this? Or does he... It's going to be really strange when there's a championship battle going on and we don't actually know how many races are left. So it's always going to be really hard to judge how the championship...
Yeah, I don't think he'll be saying there's four races left after the first three. I think we're going to have a few more than eight races on the calendar.
Yeah, but in terms of how many, because, you know, we might get to 10 races And then, you know, maybe in a month's time, are they saying, right, we are going to add the Americas, the Abu Dhabis, or if they cancel it, suddenly a 20, maybe a 30-point lead in the championship, you think, oh, it's all right because I've got six races left. And then you go, oh, actually, I've got two races left. I bet I should have pushed harder in the kind of European spell. So,
yeah, you make a good point, actually, because Lewis Hamilton has sometimes been guilty of not turning up at the start of the season. And that's something that he's absolutely going to have to do this time around, even if we are starting in Austria, where Mercedes will potentially be on the back foot, as we've mentioned already. But it will be interesting to see, as you say, how Hamilton looks at this. Will he have a mindset of the start in Austria is actually halfway through the season and he'll just come out the blocks absolutely on it, as we've seen Hamilton do so after maybe the first five or six races where he's some even behind Bottas or whatever. So I'll be interested to see how that happens. Bottas as well, will his mindset be, well, this is probably my only opportunity now to win a world championship. My seat is very much up in the air at the moment. This whole championship has thrown a lot of people off kilter a little bit. I imagine there'll be a few more dive bombs and a few more, I have to win this race in order to put myself in the conversation. So very intriguing. I cannot wait for Formula One to come back. I'm sure you can't as well, Tommy.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this kind of crazy situation could be the spicy kind of, as we're not getting a reverse grid, maybe this is the situation where we don't know how many races we're getting, who it's going to favour, racing at tracks that are not the usual time of year. It's going to be very interesting.
I cannot wait, and I'm sure you guys cannot either. That's pretty much it. So let us know who you think will win the world championship, and they will deserve it. It doesn't matter if there's 15 races, 14, 16, 17. I know we won't look at this championship as the same as the others, but it is going to take, for me anyway, in my opinion, it's going to take even more mental toughness in some ways in order to have come out of this whole situation, come out the blocks firing and win the championship. So I would have to say that it's worthy. It's a worthy champion. And would you agree, Tommy?
Absolutely. And I can see someone like Lewis Hamilton absolutely kind of thriving in this kind of situation. He
You're not a Hamilton fanboy, though. You're a Verstappen fanboy.
I know,
so,
but he's...
Just in case the comments start flying
exactly.
in.
Exactly. But no, he seems like the kind of person that you can never count Hamilton out, can you? And even when people are on his back and don't think he starts the season well, or they're saying he's too distracted in other things, he just gets it done. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting season, and I'm just desperate for racing to get back now. Can't wait.
Absolutely. We're not far away now, the start of July, but thank you everybody for listening, watching, wherever you are on Apple Podcasts or on YouTube or whatever. Make sure you give us a like, give us a thumbs up, give us a comment, let us know what you think, because we're very interested and we love a conversation, but no arguing. Okay, be good. Also, make sure to check out Beer 52, the sponsor of this podcast. And that is it. You have to be 18 or over, remember, for that. Don't be under 18, okay? I'm pointing at you. Cool. Right, Tommy, thank you so much for your time and your pleasure, your company, your... I don't know what I was trying to say, to be honest, but either way, I miss you, and we'll see each other soon, I'm sure.
Hopefully, yeah.
Bye, guys. Bye, Tommy. Bye, guys. Bye, Tommy.
Bye.